Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's exactly 6 p.m. here in Bonn, Germany. Hello and a very warm welcome to Africa Link program. My name is Jane Nyinge.
And I'm Crispin Mwakideo. Do stay with us until the end of this show because we have some interesting stories lined up for you.
That's right, Crispin. Coming up, the International Criminal Court marks 20 years since it was established, and this is what it means for Nigeria.
The most important aspect of the ICC for me is more in terms of its own preventive measures rather than the actual conviction of people.
And former US President Barack Obama, who is visiting South Africa, urges the world to emulate Nelson Mandela's vision.
I believe in a vision of equality and justice and freedom and multiracial democracy built on the premise that all people are created equal and they're endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights.
Just a taste of what we have in store for you, plus, of course, your take on these stories and many others on our DW Africa Facebook page. But first, let's get to hear what has been happening around the world.
I'm Christina Krippel with the DW News. On the eve of the 100th anniversary of Nelson Mandela's birth, the first black president of a free South Africa, former US President Barack Obama spoke in Johannesburg during a commemorative ceremony. He condemned strongman policies and attacks on democracy and pointed out the dangers of the growing gap in wealth in and between nations, criticizing grasping elites.
There's only so much you can eat. There's only so big a house you can have. There's only so many nice trips you can take. You don't have to take a vow of poverty just to say, well, let me help out a few of the other folks. Let me look at that child out there who doesn't have enough to eat or needs some school fees. Let me help him out. I'll pay a little more in taxes. It's okay.
Zimbabwe's opposition leader Nelson Chamisa today called on associations of African states to ensure that the country's election later this month is fair. The Southern African Development Community and the African Union have both sent observers to the first election since longtime ruler Robert Mugabe was ousted last year. Previous elections under Mugabe were marred by fraud and intimidation. Chamisa has also promised that his party, the Movement for Democratic Change, MDC, will not boycott the vote. The International Criminal Court in The Hague on Tuesday marked its 20th anniversary by urging all nations to help seek justice for the victims of war crimes. The Court of Last Resort persecutes perpetrators of atrocities in places where national authorities cannot or will not do so. The court has been repeatedly accused of unfairly targeting African nations. But a keynote speech in The Hague today by Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari said the ICC was vital and called on all states not to politicize its decisions. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. Japan and the European Union signed a free trade agreement in Tokyo on Tuesday. Under the pact, Japan will remove tariffs on 94% of all imports from the EU, including farm and fishery products. The EU will gradually eliminate tariffs of 99% of imports from Japan. The agreement was seen by observers as a rebuke to the protectionist trade policies of US President Donald Trump. Without mentioning the US, European Commissioner President Jean-Claude Juncker said,
"But the impact of today's agreement goes far beyond our shores. Together, we are making, by signing this agreement, a statement about the future of free and fair trade. We are showing that we are stronger and better off when we work together."
Iran has filed suit against the United States, arguing that sanctions imposed by Washington in May violate a 1955 bilateral treaty between the two countries, the International Court of Justice announced on Tuesday. The European Court of Human Rights today condemned Russia for its treatment of people protesting against Vladimir Putin in 2012. At the time, the punk band Pussy Riot staged a protest in a Moscow cathedral. The court said that the band's members, two of whom were jailed for almost 2 years, had been subjected to humiliating treatment and judged too severely. It ordered Russia to pay almost 50,000 euros in damages. For more news and information, please visit our website on dw.com. I'm Christina Krippel.
You are listening to Africa Link program. My name is Jane Nyinge.
And I'm Crispin Mwakideo. A warm welcome to you listening to Africa Link on DW Africa Facebook page. Let us know your thoughts on the stories that we're covering today.
Absolutely. We begin with a milestone, and today marks 20 years since the creation of the International Criminal Court. The Rome Statute, as it's officially known, is an international treaty with the objectives of enhancing human rights and fighting crimes against humanity. Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari was the only invited leader to the ceremony, and he had this to say about the ICC.
A strong and effective international criminal court has the potential to send a powerful message about the international community's commitment to accountability, a message that will be heard by both victims and perpetrators.
Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari. Now, Nigeria has of late been on the spotlight with news of extrajudicial killings by the military, arbitrary arrests and detentions, communal violence, and not to forget the Boko Haram insurgency. So what do Nigerians make of the ICC and the state of human rights in their country? Waisu Abubakar Idris went to find out.
As one of the 118 countries that has ratified the Rome Treaty, Nigeria is bound by the ICC provision that call for the country to arrest and sentence alleged perpetrators of human rights abuses. Dr. Kole Shetima is the chairman of the Center for Democracy and Development, which serves as a secretariat for the ICC in Nigeria. He explains the significance of the court as it celebrates 20 years of existence.
The most important aspect of the ICC for me is more in terms of its own preventive measures rather than the actual conviction of people.
Several organizations in Nigeria have lodged complaints of alleged crimes against humanity and human rights abuses, from killings by both Islamist insurgency group Boko Haram and the Nigerian army to the Shiite crisis and communal violence in central Nigeria. Saudette Shehu Mahadi is the executive secretary at the Women's Rights Advancement and Protection Alternative, RAPA. She explains how the ICC has helped them redefine rape in Nigeria.
Today, the definition of rape in the Violence Against Persons Prohibition Act is wide enough to accommodate all the forms that the Rome Statute envisages within a situation of conflict.
Although some have criticized the ICC as targeting African countries, which led to Burundi pulling out, but Awal Musa Rabsanjani, chairman of Amnesty International in Nigeria, says the court is necessary in fighting impunity.
That's the only way that we as civil society, we can have legal backing to be able to use it judiciously, you know, to ensure that there's a compliance and less impunity in terms of human rights in Africa.
As the ICC celebrates its 20 years of existence, some are calling for the establishment of an anti-corruption section of the ICC. But the inability of Nigeria to domesticate its provision in the country remains a challenge.
Waisu Abubakar Idris with that report in Abuja. And we asked you on our Facebook page, given the accusations against the ICC or specifically targeting African leaders, should Buhari be there in the first place? And we have this comment from Uchman Noikuku Uch, who is writing directly and live on our Facebook page. He says, please, ICC should look into Buhari very well.
And we have this one from Prince Jung, and he says, this man should be arrested. Someone who don't even know international law. If Buhari know what's good for him, he should bring back our leaders.
Well, keep those comments coming on our DW Africa Facebook page. We'll read them when we can.
Moving on, Libya's Coast Guard has intercepted a boat with 160 African migrants trying to cross the Mediterranean to Europe. Among them were 34 women and 9 children. This comes as EU is considering the idea of building migrants processing centers in North Africa in an attempt to deter people from making life-threatening journeys through the Mediterranean.
Among the countries in consideration is Tunisia, which apart from dealing with its own migrants crisis, the stagnant economy has pushed its young people to leave the country. Abubakar Jallo with this report by Fanny Faskar.
I'm on my way to one of the migrant centers in the capital, Tunis. Here, some of the migrants rescued from the Mediterranean Sea find temporary refuge. I meet Nadesh from the Democratic Republic of Congo. For months, she was a sex slave in Libya, she tells me.
Quand le monsieur vit que When they discovered that I was pregnant, they let me go. I don't want to stay here in Tunisia. I want to go to Europe.
Tunisia has no functioning asylum system. Apart from tackling the high number of migrants passing through en route to Europe, it's facing an increase in number of its own youth who dream of a brighter future outside Tunisia. Among the more than 7,000 Tunisians who tried to cross the Mediterranean last year, Wael Farjani was one of them.
There's no hope here. I'm neither dead nor alive. It's all the same. We don't have any jobs, no future, nothing. This country kills our dreams. That's why I want to escape.
Wael has survived several boat accidents in the Mediterranean, but he still wants to try his luck.
If I stay here in Tunisia, I have zero hope. In Europe, I at least have a chance.
Tunisia's government has repeatedly said it does not want to be the gatekeeper for migrants trying to reach Europe.
And that report was written by Fanny Faskar. Now back to Africa, where former US President Barack Obama has said politicians using politics of fear, resentment and retrenchment has risen at an unimaginable pace in the past few years. The former president made the remarks as he delivered the annual Nelson Mandela Lecture in South Africa.
Now, Obama's speech coincides with events to mark 100 years since the birth of former South Africa President Nelson Mandela, who died in 2013 at the age of 95. Both men were the first black presidents of the countries. Subri Govenda followed the event for us and our reports from Johannesburg.
The former U.S. President Barack Obama was greeted with cheers by a crowd of more than 15,000 people as he entered Wanderers Cricket Stadium in Johannesburg. In his address, which was also streamed online, Obama urged people around the world to respect human rights and other values under threat.
Through sacrifice and unwavering leadership, and perhaps most of all, through his moral example, Mandela and the movement he led would come to signify something larger. He came to embody the universal aspirations of dispossessed people all around the world, their hopes for a better life, the possibility of a moral transformation in the conduct of human affairs.
While not directly mentioning his successor, President Donald Trump, Obama's speech countered many of Trump's policies, rallying people to keep alive the ideas that Mandela worked for, including democracy, diversity, and good education for all.
I believe in Nelson Mandela's vision. I believe in a vision shared by Gandhi and King and Abraham Lincoln. I believe in a vision of equality and justice and freedom and multiracial democracy, built on the premise that all people are created equal and they're endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights. And I believe that a world governed by such principles is possible and that it can achieve more peace and more cooperation in pursuit of a common good. That's what I believe.
As South Africans are gearing up to observe Mandela's 100th birth anniversary on Wednesday, many people say they are concerned that politicians today are not following in the footsteps of Mandela to build a united, common and non-racial South Africa.
All the politicians now are great. They think themselves, not the community. Nelson Mandela, he tried to the people of South Africa, but now the guys are in the parliament. They think themselves only.
There's lots of corruption, and the most of them, they like, we voting, and they get richer, and we get nothing after that.
These people now, in a politician, they are more looking at themselves. They are more interested about their power struggles. But as if it's Mandela going up now, wake up now, and see that whatever they're doing, they won't be happy at all.
And that report was compiled by Subri Govenda. And for more on Mandela's legacy, visit dw.com/Africa.
You are listening to Africa Link program with me, Jen Nyinge.
And I'm Crispin Mokidewa. A warm welcome to you listening live on DW Africa Facebook page. Feel free to share your thoughts and opinions on the stories that we are airing. And don't forget to share the link as well. And still to come, the story of a young IT specialist bringing education to underprivileged children in Ghana.
If you really want to have a future, you should look at those who are going to take care of the future. So it's important to start thinking about how do we get these young people to start thinking about how do we use technology to solve problems.
Crispin, such an incredible story of a young person who is ready to bring change in the society.
Indeed, and we are looking forward to that. But first, let's head to Nigeria, where Boko Haram is at it again. Reports coming from Nigeria say dozens of Nigerian soldiers are feared dead after a Boko Haram attack on a remote military base in northeastern Nigeria. The insurgents keep attacking military installations and civilians despite declarations by President Muhammadu Buhari that the government had defeated the Islamist terrorist group.
5 months ago, Boko Haram kidnapped more than 100 schoolgirls in Dapchi, a town in northeastern Nigeria, which lies not far from the border with Niger. 4 weeks later, the terrorists let the girls go. But for many among them, a self-determined and normal life seems out of reach. This report by Adrian Krish is now presented by Isaac Mugabi.
Sitting in front of their house, 15-year-old Falmata is wearing a red hijab. She says she wants to become a lawyer to help those in distress. Her 14-year-old sister Aisha is dreaming of becoming a doctor. All their dreams and ambitions seem valid and normal, except that contrary to other teenagers, the two girls are not in school. But why is that? An embarrassed Aisha had this to say.
I don't know. Our parents told us to wait for a while.
Aisha and Falmata's father, Zana Zakaria, says at the moment school is out of the question because he has already arranged to marry both daughters off. He will get a bride price of between $60 to $120 for each girl. That is a lot of money in the poorest region of Nigeria.
Look at them. They are ripe enough to move into the homes of their husbands. They can't stay here. That is against our tradition. Their husbands will decide if they can go back to school. It's out of my hands.
In February, Falmata and Aisha were taken hostage by Boko Haram after the Islamist terrorist group attacked their boarding school and took away more than 100 schoolgirls. They were freed a month later after negotiations with the government. None of the kidnapped pupils have so far received any psychological counseling to help them deal with their traumatic experience, and many of them don't want to share the experience as Boko Haram hostages. One of the Dapchi girls, Falmatu, is one of the few who returned to school and brave enough to share what happened to her. She says shortly before setting them free, the terrorists threatened them not to go back to school or they will kidnap them again. Falmata was afraid, but unlike her schoolmate's father, Zakaria wants to marry his daughter off, Falmata says her father encouraged her to go back to school.
My father told me, why did I spend so much money on your education if you quit now? Think hard about your future and that will help you.
Modu Malji Ajiri from the Yobe State Education Ministry told DW that the school in Dapchi was now safe. A couple of soldiers have been posted in front of the gates and there are checkpoints on the roads accessing the village. Ajiri urged parents to give the girls another chance at education.
Since these insurgents have been fighting education all along, so for them not to send the words to school means they have succumbed to the pressure. So we are calling on them that they shouldn't succumb, they shouldn't let the ignorance rule them.
According to the UN's Children's Agency, UNICEF, 10.5 million Nigerian children don't go to school. The situation is especially dire in the northeast since the start of the Boko Haram insurgency. In the last couple of years, the terrorist group destroyed more than 1,400 schools and killed around 2,300 teachers.
Isaac Mugabe with that report that was prepared by Adrian Krish. And now on our Facebook, there are lots of comments coming in. One from Emeka Obi, who accuses or says Buhari is not qualified to address the International Criminal Court. He's a dictator with the worst human rights record in Africa. He has killed and maimed many people seeking for freedom in Nigeria. DW Africa asked Buhari, where is Nnamdi Kanu?
That's a tough one. And we have this one from Marcellinus Adam Smago. He says, we have leaders in Africa, but we lack capable and right-thinking leaders. Full stop.
Interesting comments there. And of course, the ICC needs the permission of the country for us to do investigation. So unless Nigeria does go ahead and ask the ICC to investigate any cases of human rights violations, then they will not do that. So keep those comments coming. As I said, we'll read them whenever we can.
Africa on the move.
There's no doubt that digitalization is sweeping across the African continent at unimaginable speed. Young people are getting connected online and others are developing digital solutions which are making life easier for the country's 1 billion people.
Now, Crispin, of course, behind this great technological leap is IT education. But have you ever asked yourself how to take this kind of education to school children living with disabilities or those in deprived communities? Well, in Ghana, a young IT specialist is making an impact with some support. Isaac Kalechi is in Accra and tells us this story.
Over a dozen students in a school in eastern Ghana gather around a single computer for an IT literacy lesson. Like in this school, IT literacy is a challenge across Ghana. Most schools lack computers and relevant tools for teaching the subject. This means children in deprived communities rarely get the chance to learn IT, let alone get the needed exposure. The situation is worse for children living with disabilities. That's where TechEra, an NGO that introduces IT to those living with disabilities and the underprivileged, comes in. 22-year-old Derek Omari is the head of the TechEra group.
If you really want to have a future, you should look at those who are going to take care of the future. And we are living in an age where technology is directing and moving everything forward. And so it's important to start thinking about how do we get these young people to start thinking about how do we use technology to solve problems.
Omari, who recently received the Queen Elizabeth Young Leaders Award for his efforts, says their aim is to help children living with disabilities to acquire the needed skills in IT to enable them to compete with children in privileged positions.
We are teaching them to use smartphones, computers, so that they can have access to a more quality education. We are introducing programming in technical schools, introducing programming in senior high schools, introducing programming in private schools and public schools, because we want the students to learn it as part of what they do in school and see how they can directly apply what they learn and combine them together to solve problems.
Omari started his initiative 3 years ago while in university. He says the motivation was because of his own poor background. Omari works with a team of young volunteers who take the services to the doorsteps of children in very deprived communities. Some of these kids that benefited from his project shared their excitement.
It was very interactive, interesting, and very educative because we have been given the opportunity to create things with programs which are mostly known to IT students.
As I came here, I learned how to wire and to do more programming. So I think this will be a very great thing that has happened to my life.
With better funding, the TechEra initiative could become a bigger success story, Omari says. He's now hoping to extend his IT learning programs to other parts of the continent.
We are currently working on establishing a chapter of our work in Uganda. And so we realize that we have a plan to even scale up beyond Ghana.
And who knows, maybe the next Bill Gates or Steve Jobs will be a student who went through the TechEra IT initiative.
And I do hope that that dream actually does come true. Isaac Kalechi with that report in Accra.
Focus Europe.
In recent weeks, Germany has witnessed a heated debate on migration, which almost brought down the Grand Coalition government. While much of the attention focused on a dispute between Interior Minister Horst Seehofer and Chancellor Angela Merkel, who belong to different parties that form a political union, there were more pressing issues like the struggle of immigrants to integrate into the German society.
Now, it generally takes up to 7 years for new arrivals to learn the German language, settle down and find work. But a Berlin startup hopes to speed up this process, as Tony Andrews reports.
Welcome again for everyone. Happy to be with you today.
I'm in Berlin, Germany, at an organization called Ready School, an initiative that seeks to help refugees integrate into the German job market.
Okay, so Ready has two programs.
Ready School has been celebrated as a catalyst for integrating the over 600,000 refugees in the country who are currently of working age and need a job.
My name is Omar Al-Sabbar. I'm from Syria, Aleppo.
Omar has been in Germany for 2.5 years. Though he had just graduated with a degree in computer programming from a Syrian university in 2015, he had little hope of finding a job here once he arrived. He found out about the school through a Facebook post and decided to sign up for a free course in a programming language that he had been unfamiliar with.
They were looking for a programmer, and I got suggested.
Omar got the job. He worked there for 1.5 years and has since started his master's degree at Berlin's Technical University.
Working in Germany is something we have to do. I feel like it's like a duty. We came here, we got support from the community. Now we have also to do something in return.
Since the Ready School started in 2015, over 600 students have gone through various courses. 50% of them have ended up in jobs, paid internships, or some kind of study program.
Ready is not only about giving them an opportunity to work, but also creating hope and creating great synergies in our community.
That's Manuel Laudem, a program manager at the school. Though the institution benefits new arrivals to Germany, companies benefit too. The German IT industry currently has 55,000 specialized jobs it needs to fill. The idea for the school arose from the ambition to connect these companies with job seekers and volunteers. But not all graduates necessarily go on to work in the IT industry.
So my name is Fadi Zaim. I'm from Syria.
Fadi was part of the school's very first cohort.
Since we started the school, I was always saying the Syrian food is the best food and it's very tasty.
For his course graduation, he remembers presenting an online shop selling Syrian food. It was just a mock-up, meant to demonstrate his programming skills. But surprisingly, one of the attendees thought it was a real shop and later came up to him saying,
"Next month we have 2 workshops and we would like to order from you. So please send me your offer and your flyers." I have literally no offers, no flyers, nothing. I was going only to present what we were working on.
Fadi scrambled together family and friends to try to conjure this catering business out of thin air.
We catered for Mrs. Merkel when she visited here. We catered for Facebook, for Zalando, Deutsche Bahn, Deutsche Telekom, Cisco, McKinsey, very big names.
He says he's pleased to help out the school because of what it's done for him, but also because of what it represents to the general public.
DW correspondent Tony Andrews with that report.
And as you earlier heard in the program, US President Barack Obama is in South Africa, and today he has delivered a very strong speech, and this speech coincides with events to mark 100 years since the birth of former South African President Nelson Mandela, who died in 2013 at the age of 95. And Crispin, I think the part that was really interesting on my side is where he said that people are not born hating, but they are taught to hate. So people can also be taught to love.
Yeah, indeed. He's back to his charismatic way. And we have comments like this one here from Momo. I mean, he doesn't have only admirers. Momo Solomon says, "Obama's presidency did not benefit Africa 1 cent. So why does he suddenly realize that he's African too?"
And Kenneth Free says, "Hope Obama, who couldn't initiate any program to help Africans while in office. Instead, he's busy speaking grammar and beautiful English without looking at already prepared papers is hopeless this period."
And we have still Issa, who says Buhari should be there because President Muhammad Buhari is the president to be. He's doing all he can do to fight corruption across the country. Thank you for your comments. I'm Crispin Mwakidale.
And my name is Jen Nyinge. Thank you so much for your time.